Hi, this is Jerry from SharePoint. This episode has been recorded remotely due to the COVID-19 restrictions and therefore may contain some technical glitches. We hope you'll bear with us until it's safe to return to our regular format of recording in the breweries. Until then, thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Welcome to SharePoint, where we tap into the craft beer scene. I'm Jerry Holla, your host.
Today, I'm talking with Yancey Bodenstein from Clear Skies Meadery. Thanks for being on the show, Yancey.
Thank you for asking me to be here.
You guys opened this April, so share with our audience what it was like to open during a pandemic.
Well, it's kind of interesting because we had a soft opening for, you know, friends and family, and put it out on Facebook. And it was the weekend right before our governor actually shut down our state here in Maryland. And so now we actually kind of joke around when people come into the shop and say, so how long have you been open? And the response is, how long have we been in this pandemic? So yeah, our grand opening was supposed to be April 3rd. So we obviously did not have that, but we're doing the best that we can.
Is there anything in particular that you face specific challenges of, you know, you were moving towards opening and obviously you didn't see this coming, that once it did, any particular challenges you really had to deal with to continue to open and move forward?
You know, actually, I have to give some huge props to the city of Gaithersburg and also to Montgomery County here in Maryland, and the state even, because they did everything within their power to make it easy to open and to serve people. So we had expedited reviews from the county and city to be able to deliver mead. And then all of a sudden now we have, you know, outdoor seating because the city was, you know, expedited the review process for those permits. So everybody within the state of Maryland that deals with the permitting process, especially with alcohol, because that's always an issue, have been just great right off the bat. And they've been incredibly supportive. So I got to give some props to them.
And that's good. That's good to hear. Cause like you said, you got enough other stuff going on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I noticed that you have a bit of a steampunk theme going on with the logo. So tell us a little bit about that along with the story behind the name Clear Skies.
Oh, this is awesome. Let's see here. Christmas 2018, some really, really longtime friends of ours. We had just finished Christmas dinner and probably about three or four servings of mead into the conversation. And we just said, all right, we either need to fish or cut bait on this, because this is something that we've been talking about for 8 years. And we either need to do it or we need to stop talking about it. And so we said, all right, let's do it. And so in, you know, January, February, my wife, my business partner, Manisha Eigner, and I drove down to Richmond, Virginia, because a good friend of mine has Blackheath Meadery down there. And so we went to talk to him about, you know, all the trials and tribulations for getting up and running. Went and toured a few of the other breweries in that area because Scott's Addition in Richmond is a great spot for craft brewery. And we were just going down and thinking about the idea and, all right, so what is our theme going to be? And my wife said, steampunk. And that was it. And then we said, all right, we're done. That's it. And Clear Skies, that's actually named after my daughters. So my eldest daughter, her middle name is Claire. And my youngest daughter, her middle name is Skye, after the Isle of Skye in Scotland. So Clear Skies.
And that's really cool.
So that's awesome. That's how it is.
That's great. Now, for people that really aren't familiar, can you tell them a little bit about steampunk to say, what does that mean? I mean, I'm familiar with it. I look at the logo, I can see it. It's really cool. But for people that don't know.
So yeah, steampunk is basically, you know, imagine a blend of industrial and Victorian time periods, and where there's a lot of gears, there's a lot of mechanisms in things. And, you know, there's some Robert Downey Jr. movies that definitely play into the steampunk thing. It's just it's an eclectic, it's, it just really is that mesh between old and new, and that kind of really harmonized with what we were thinking of, bringing the oldest fermented beverage, mead, into the new time periods of now. So it just seemed to really mesh. And besides, I do have to agree that logo is pretty sick.
Yeah, no, it's definitely cool. It stands out. And like you said, it's a nice blend between the two, because I think if anything, people might draw kind of a natural Renaissance medieval type of parallel with mead, and to not go in that direction, but to go with this blend of industrial, modern, mechanical, I think it's really cool. So,
and that's also, you know, really dovetails into, you know, the Renaissance festival, because, you know, that's where this all started. Mm-hmm. And to be able to, the Renaissance Festival here in Maryland, at least, the mead that they serve there is too sweet for me. And given that I was just into home brewing, you know, 18, 19 years ago, my wife was saying, wait a minute, you can do better than this. And I'm a chemist by training. So I thought, you know what, this is a gauntlet that I'm going to be picking up here, and we're just going to run with it. And here we are.
Well, that segues nicely into mentioning that last month you won a silver medal at the National Honey Board's Mead Crafters Competition.
Yep.
So tell everybody a little bit about that.
So that is, that mead in particular is a dry orange blossom mead. And we queried our staff in the tap room to come up with different names. And so for all of our meads. And so Friending Fenrir, and that's a tongue twister, was the one that won for that particular one. And so it's a orange blossom, traditional dry. So if you're following styles of meads, it is definitely a traditional dry. And this particular competition, the way that they broke it down is that they had all the different styles of meads and then also varietals. So what that meant is, you could only use one varietal of honey in your mead. And this particular one happened to be orange blossom. And the one that we had entered was about 6 months old, which is ideally the earliest that I would like to serve mead. Mm-hmm. But given the situations, we just don't have that time period that we can wait for six months before we put something on tap. Yeah. So it's a little bit shorter. But yeah, there was a totally a surprise. It was our first entry that our first competition that we entered anything, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah, especially as you're saying, if it's sooner, then you'd really want to put it out there for people to have it get recognized in that manner. Just mm-hmm. getting started, that's got to be a nice boost for you guys.
Oh, absolutely, that's pretty cool.
That is awesome. Well, it leads nicely into us learning a little bit more about mead. So share with our audience what some of the similarities and differences are between making mead and brewing beer.
Making beer, you obviously need to boil the wort. You extract the sugars from grains or any other fermentables that out there that you want to use, such as molasses or you know, Belgian dark sugars or, you know, any of those sorts of things. And then you extract the grains and then you throw it in the boil kettle, boil away, add your hops, preservatives, typically, that's what they were used historically. And then ferments and, you know, about a week or so later, carbonate and you're good to go. And then you enjoy nice fresh beer from the keg. Mead is more closely associated to how you produce wine. There's no boiling involved, at least the process that I use, there's no boiling. Because I found that when you heat anything up, you get a lot of aromatics that all of a sudden just flood the room and you're going, oh my goodness, this is just amazing. And then it dawns on you that all those aromatics are now no longer in your honey that you were just heating up.
Gotcha.
So I chose early on not to boil or not to heat up any of the honey that I use. It makes it a lot easier because now all I need to do is dump the honey in water, dilute it to the original gravity that I'm shooting for, mm-hmm. And then get it to the right temperature for the yeast, throw the yeast in there and, you know, feed them along the way and let them go. The main difference between fermenting beer and then fermenting wine versus mead is that honey by itself is a horrible place for anything to live in. Okay. It has a very, very low residual water in there. And so this is why honey is actually the only consumable for humans, consumable food that lasts millennia. Wow. And that's simply because there's it's such a low residual water moisture content in there that nothing really can live. But as soon as you dilute it, any of the spores of fungus, yeast, bacteria that are in there, they're just dormant, all of a sudden are going to be in an environment where they can actually start to grow. Okay. So that's why you want to make sure you pitch a very healthy dose of yeast so that you can outcompete those right off the bat.
Gotcha. Okay. That's great. Well, talk about the different styles of mead. There's Sizer, Piment, Melomel, Metheglin. Talk to us about that and let us know what each of those are.
Okay. So Sizer is actually this in the glass. It's basically an apple juice based mead. And the best Sizers that I've come across that I've made, in my opinion, are with hard cider apple juice. Sure, you can go to the mom and pop shop, the Safeway, the Whole Foods, and all those sorts of places, and get unfiltered apple juice and dilute honey in that and make yourself a great cider. There's a place here in Maryland called Distillery Lane Cider Works, mm-hmm. and they're actually really cool because they have planted something like 20 or 30 different hard cider varietal apples. These are not meant to be eaten. They are meant specifically to be pressed and juiced and converted into a hard cider. Those ones make the really good sizers because you get that tartness that just gets you right back here when you drink a sizer. So fundamentally, a sizer is an apple juice-based mead. And you can use any honey varietal with that. A Metheglin, pretty much any herbs and spices. Think of it that way. So like if you're throwing in some vanilla and some oak to get a buttery Chardonnay sort of mead, then that would be that. Or, throw some vanilla in cinnamon, some Christmas spices into a thick, rich buckwheat, that would be a Metheglin. Melomels are pretty much any sort of fruit is added in there. And okay. It can either be purees, juice, the whole fruit. Mm-hmm. And there's also the capsamels, I think that's how you pronounce it. So anything with a hot chili pepper. So like a habanero, or if you really want to go out of the world, throw in a couple ghost peppers in there, and that'll really light you up. Actually a chipotle is really, really nice because you get that smoky character to it. Mm-hmm. And then also you get the heat. And if you pair that with some smoked ribs in the summertime, let me tell you, nice. Starting to salivate right here. those are, and then the traditionals, those are the just honey, so like just orange blossom or wildflower, and you can either have it be dry, sweet, or semi-sweet, and those are all based on how much residual sugar you have in the mead when you're done.
Okay. What about piment?
So piment is where you have grape juice.
Oh,
and
okay.
So a lot of homebrew shops out there, you can get 5-gallon buckets of like either concentrated Sangiovese or Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, or any of the white grapes, Pinot Noir, Pinot Grigio. So if you take that juice and then dilute some honey into that, there you have a piment. We don't make those because there's also another style called a braggot. Which is a beer, it's a wort that you add more than 51% of fermentables come from honey, then you have a braggot. We can't do braggots or pie mints at our place commercially because the federal government does not like barley-based fermentables and non-barley-based fermentables being fermented in the same vessel. With a pie mint, given that you're now crossing the line into a winery, then there's also some issues there. So, but the fun thing is that that we do our at our shop, and that we'll do later on, is we do encourage our guests to request different blends at the tap. Because once the product gets to the tap and now it's the customer who is making that decision, then we can make whatever the customer wants at that point in time.
Okay. Wow. That's great. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. Explain to our audience the difference between mead and cider.
So mead is fermented honey and cider is fermented apple juice. And so that's where the sizer comes in. That mixes those two together.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I think it was great that you mentioned DLC because Distillery Lane Cider Works was our guest on our last show. With Tim. Yeah. So we're talking about ciders and learn about them, and now we're going to learn about mead. So it's pretty neat that you have some working knowledge of each other. You know, there's some crossover there. One of the things that Tim said that he was having to educate people on was that some of their cider is still. And mm-hmm. people thought it was flat. So we had to educate people the difference between still versus flat with regards to cider. Do you run into any of that with mead?
Absolutely, because all of our mead is carbonated.
Okay.
So it's sparkling. And that's primarily it's a carryover from what I do here at home. Is I have a kegerator, all supplied by the same CO2 canister. Regardless of what's in the kegs, it gets carbonated. Right. And so over time, whenever people came over to my house, and because I had an 8-tap kegerator at one point in time where 4 taps were beer and 4 taps were mead, my wife told me I could make all the beer I wanted as long as there was mead on tap.
Nice.
And so everything just naturally became carbonated. And in our current setup, it's a 2-story building. That we're in, and all the fermentation takes place in the basement. That's also where the cold room is, and it's 2,000 square feet, so 1,000 square feet on the upper level and 1,000 square feet on the bottom level. So in order to get our product upstairs, we have to push it there somehow. And so we just made the decision right off the bat, and all right, we're just going to carbonate this. And so when it's served, it is petulant or carbonated sparkling. And when people get growlers to take home, they always ask, so how long is this going to last? I was like, well, you know, if you keep it capped, you know, with a, cause we have flip top bottles that we use for the growlers. And if you keep it capped in the fridge, should be good to go for a week plus, but as soon as you uncap it, you are going to start to lose the carbonation. So it's not going to be a sparkling mead anymore. It's going to, it will start to become flat or still. And that is not a bad thing. What you now are experiencing is a completely different style of mead. So you get a twofer, you know, you get a two for one. And, you know, some of the, one of the best meads that I've ever had was at the Mazer's Cup when it was out in Denver a few years ago. And it was a bourbon barrel aged mead. And it was one of these ones where I completely forget, you know, which meadery this came from, but it left such an impression. But the guy was serving at the table and he said, hey, do you want to try something? He's like, Yeah. And he reaches underneath the table and pulls up this, you know, 375 mil bottle, cracks it open. And that was the best mead that I ever had. And it was a flat or a still mead. And it just, it really depends on what the mead maker wants to present to the guest, to the customer. I found that when something is carbonated, it tends to carry the aromatics and the flavors a little bit better to the nasal cavity of whoever's drinking it. Whereas if it's flat or not carbonated, it does need a little bit more experience. You just, when you drink a wine that's not carbonated, you expect it to behave a certain way. Mm-hmm. And so you would expect that mead to behave the same way if it's still.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it just basically means there's two different styles. So right. It's just, which one do you like?
Gotcha. Try them both. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's cool. Well, I understand that you don't filter your mead. So share mm-hmm. with us why, and maybe if there's any similarities between why some craft breweries don't filter.
So it's different philosophies out there. Depending on who you talk to, they'll say that filtering is the best thing in the world because it gets all the yeast out. It makes it so that you're guaranteed not to have any bottle bombs, you know, when your product goes out there. And I get that. I understand that. What I've come to realize, and also with the current process and the space that we have in our current facility, we don't have the space to have any sort of major filtration setup. Plus, when we, you know, our passion fruit mead, for example, is used, we use passion fruit puree, and that will clog up any filter out there.
Yeah.
So we just made the decision that instead of throwing a lot of this product down the sink, because we just can't get it as filtered as possible, mm-hmm. Let's do our best to rack off as much of that puree as possible. You know, crash chill it to get everything down at the bottom of that bright tank, and then just rack off of it. Our pumpkin mead that's currently on tap, if we tried to filter that, we'd have no product. And when it comes out of the tap, it is very, very hazy. And if you let it sit for a while, you'll actually start to see a sediment form.
Okay.
And we've come to realize that that's where a lot of the flavor is. And if you start filtering all that out, then all of a sudden, yeah, you're going to have an orange flavored drink. And who really wants that?
Right. People
expect to have a certain flavor when they have it. So I personally think that if you filter too much, then you really are going to take a lot of the mouthfeel components out of there, and also some of the taste and the aromatics. And that's just my personal opinion. I don't have any qualitative data to really support that. Mm-hmm. And especially when you start going into the session meads instead of, you know, the meads that we typically do, or which are 13%. So mm-hmm. a session mead would be, you know, 7%. Those struggle with having a good mouthfeel. And if you start filtering those, then you're going to even turn it further into, I'm drinking a 7% water here. I mean, come on.
Right.
So it's a fine line to walk. And, you know, when we get to the point where we're making larger volumes, then we're going to have to make those decisions of, all right, so when we package this, are we packaging it purely in kegs, 5 gallon Sankey kegs for restaurants and bars to serve? Are we putting it in bottles? What kind of bottles? Are we going straight to cans? Mm-hmm. You know, those sorts of things.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I know that when we talked with Ty at Hysteria, they don't filter. And that was one of the things he talked about. A lot of the same things that you're saying. It kind of feels like it strips the flavors from the beer. But the trade-off is, you know, how the shelf life is. And so he's like, we've been really specific with people. He goes, especially when we do fruited things, he goes, keep this cold. He's like, do not let it warm up. Do not put it on the shelf, because then the yeast's going to wake up and say, ooh, sugar, and then just start chewing it away. And then you're going to have these cans exploding. And he's like, we had too many problems with some distributors that weren't listening. And he said, so we couldn't do it anymore. We're like, okay, well, we just can't can the fruited stuff because people can't, certain people can't behave and listen to directions and make sure to keep it cold. So, you know, they're not going to change what they're doing. So like you said, they didn't want to filter and they didn't want to strip it down. So they had to be careful about what they packaged and what they didn't.
Yep. And we're definitely going to be taking that into account when we, you know, start up a canning line, start up a bottling line. We just might go straight into, you know, like the Belgian beer style bottles with the wire cage and corks.
Yeah.
So that they can handle a little bit more pressure than standard wine bottles.
Okay. That's good. Well, where can people find you online? Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, things like that.
So I would recommend that they go to the website, which is 3ws.clearskiesmeadery.co. And that's all one word. And it is .co, not .com.
Okay.
Primarily because somebody already had the .com domain, so we went with .co.
Okay. Well, that's great. I mean, we'll have that available in our show notes, and we'll put that on our website at sharepintpodcast.com.
Cool. Thanks.
You bet. Well, we've learned about the meadery. Let's get to know you a little bit better, Yancey. Tell us about your role at Clear Skies.
So I am the mead maker. I'm also one of the co-owners of the company. So my responsibilities pretty much are making sure that we have a high quality product to sell to our guests. And I also am responsible with coming up with all of the formulas, dealing with the TTB, the Tobacco Bureau. They're the ones that approve all the formulas, approve all the labels, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And we do have an assistant mead maker that works with me, primarily because I do have a full-time job during the day. So I can't be at the meadery the whole time. So I hop on the horn with him and say, all right, so what's the plan for the week? Where are we going? What are we doing? And then, you know, after hours, if I need to come in and help behind the bar, you know, pour some pints, 5 ounce pours, not full pint, because that would put somebody under the table. or, you know, on the weekends, we're going to a farmer's market. We're, you know, making a whole bunch of mead. Like this coming Sunday, we'll be doing, you know, 6 1-barrel conicals full of mead. That's predominantly my role is to make the product.
Okay. Well, how did you get started in the mead industry? I mean, you talked about the fact that you were a longtime home brewer. So how did you make that pivot from beer to mead?
So, I'm a chemist by training. Mm-hmm. And so I like to experiment and control different variables with what I do, either in baking or, you know, regular just food production, because I really enjoy food as well. And so when my wife and I became pregnant with our oldest one, she's now almost 18. So I've been doing this for about 19 years. My wife saw that I was coming home from the liquor store with, you know, 4 packs of Dogfish 90 Minute. Those aren't really cheap beers. And my wife said, hey, we're going to have a kid. We're going to be doing all this stuff, needing to pay for all this stuff. You need to curtail your beer habit. And I said, well, I could make it and that would be cheaper. So I decided to start investigating how to actually homebrew, mm-hmm. and started that up. And, you know, I had mentioned earlier that then we went to the Renaissance Festival and tried mead. And so that was probably about 17 years ago that I started to go into the mead side of things. And I just started to realize that it was to make a batch of mead really only takes you probably about an hour's worth of work.
Hmm.
And then about 6 months of patience, which is completely different from making beer, because, you know, I have a 25-gallon boil kettle for brewing, so I make a 25-gallon batch. And that's, you know, a whole bunch of kegs of beer that, you know, with that, I would actually, you know, split the 25-gallon batch into two and have two different yeast strains, or split it into four and have two different yeast strains and dry hop one and dry hop the other one and just see what flavor profiles I get. And then over time, making mead, I started to really dial it in. And I have a yeast strain that I use here at home. It happens to be a K1V1116, if anybody's interested. It's an 18% tolerance yeast strain. And that one really keeps a lot of the aromatics in the mead. Whereas if you use a champagne yeast, the EC1118, that one, it blows a lot of the aromatics out of the airlock. So it's not a very pleasant 18% mead when you're drinking that one, whereas with the K1B, it is actually a more pleasant experience. And so once I started to really dial it in, then it just happened that a lot of our friends and family just started saying, like, you need to sell this. Can we buy this? And I said, well, legally, no, you can't buy it from me because no, but you could rent the vessel that you have it in, you know, or you can buy the honey that goes into it or something like that. So yeah, that's pretty much how I got into the commercial side of it is, all right, we either need a fish or cut bait, make this dream real, or just continue dreaming.
Well, I mean, that's interesting because, like I said, we just talked last episode with Tim at DLC, and he said the same type of thing. He said, I'm a reformed homebrewer that I do cider now. And he said the same thing. He said, you know, there's different challenges. He said, it's not, you know, easy by any means. He said, but he said, it's a lot less headaches. And like you said, a lot less of really staying on top of and watching something and so many steps and this and that at a certain time. And when he started doing the cider, he's had the same reaction from friends and family. They're like, they really liked it. And so he's like, okay, less of a headache, a little bit easier to do. Everybody likes it. Maybe we'll go this way. So yeah, that's great. We've discussed that the current situation of COVID has probably been your biggest challenge to date. So share with us what's keeping you committed during these tough times.
It's the guests that come in the door. Really, it's being behind the bar and having somebody come in and say, I live two blocks away from here and I've seen you on Facebook. I've seen you in, you know, there's an app around here called Nextdoor. I've seen you in these places. You've been written up in you know, the local community newspapers. You know, I figured might as well give you a chance. So what is mead? And I've never had it before. So what would you recommend? And it's like, oh, this is excellent. This is a completely blank canvas of somebody walking in here. I am either going to make it or break it with this individual, because that's the biggest challenge with mead. Is because A, people think that you're misspelling or mispronouncing the word meat. You know, it's like, no, this is not a charcuterie board. We do have that if you want a charcuterie board. But it's seeing the reaction on their face when they taste it and they realize, wait a minute, this was fermented with honey? This is supposed to be sweet. Honey is sweet. Why isn't this sweet? And just seeing their brain go through a whole bunch of, you know, conflicting thought processes, and then having them kind of, you know, coalesce around a single thought of, oh, this is good, you know, and then it's like, all right, so if you like that one, do you want to try some of these other ones? We have 10 on tap, you know, so it really is the almost the joy that you see in somebody's face when they try it, and it's like, this is good. Actually, I had somebody try our mead for the first time this evening, and it's our apple pie version. So it's a Northern Spice sizer that we have cinnamon and vanilla that we've steeped that in. And so it pretty much tastes like an apple pie, just without the crust. And she just the look on her face and the little glint in her eyes, like, this is nice. So, I mean, really, that's what gets me out of bed in the morning when I'm going to make mead, is that idea of, I'm going to have this kind of an impact on somebody who's never had mead before. And then it's also really cool when you see people, you know, again, tonight, there were these two customers standing outside the door. I didn't recognize them, but they recognized me. Mm. And they were saying, oh, we were just waiting for you to get here. And I was like, okay. And, you know, they just hit up another conversation and they're repeat customers coming in. And, you know, unfortunately with the masks, it's really hard to recognize somebody unless you get a really good look at least their eyes. It's, you know, building that community around this product that's basically probably the oldest fermented beverage that humans have been consuming. You don't need agriculture for it at all. You just mm-hmm. needed some brave sap to go crack into a beehive. So, and there you go.
Nice. Well, what do you think has contributed to your success, both in getting to the point of opening and now?
So getting to the point of opening, in my opinion, it's a team effort, realistically, between me and Manisha Eigner, my business partner. But not only the two of us, but also our families. Mm. Because Manisha has spent hours and hours and hours getting all of the permits ready, submitted, talking with lawyers to get everything, you know, everything copacetic and good to go. And, you know, she did all that legwork to get everything in Montgomery County, Maryland. So just to give you a timeline of how quickly this went. So in Christmas, we said, we're going to do this. Mm. In March is when our business was incorporated. We signed the lease on our current tap room on April 2nd.
Wow.
We had all the renovation plans approved and renovation done, all the inspections in terms of utilities and also the states and local authorities for alcohol production done and approved by January 3rd, less than a year later. We made our first batches of mead January 4th of this year. Hmm. And so within less than a year, we were able to get everything through and approved and good to go. Wow. And so it really is that drive of seeing this seeing that goal over there. It is not a train coming down that tunnel. It really is the light at the end of the tunnel. And so that it was simply just to get us to the point where we were starting to produce and ferment alcohol in January of 2020. We had no idea what was coming around mid-March.
Sure.
So it was every 2 weeks, myself and the assistant brewer, we were in there making another 8 one-girl batches of mead. And they were either going into bright tanks for additions or going straight into kegs. And that was every 2 weeks that we were doing that. Mm. And we were just trying to fill up as much of our 15-gallon kegs that we have just for the anticipation that if this does go through the roof, we have got to have a backlog of mead because otherwise we're going to be struggling to keep up. Mm-hmm. And then now we're more strategic about how we decide, all right, so based off of the sales that we've had over the past couple of weeks or the past couple of months, where should we go? What should we do? Given that we're getting into almost a year into it now, we're starting to think about, all right, so the spring lineup, what should it be? What sold last year? What didn't sell last year? You know, what is keeping us going now, it really is the word of mouth. Mm-hmm. People are coming in. It's like, oh yeah, this friend told me about you. Or, you know, I saw this friend commented on, you know, your Facebook post and I got to try this. Or Ren Fair was canceled this year. We had to go somewhere to do something,
right.
You know, and So yeah, now we're looking at the spring. So we had a strawberry mead that really didn't work very well directly from the tap. But I got to tell you, when you take that mead and you put it in a slushy, it sells like gangbusters. So, you know, when I was talking today with my assistant brewer, because that's what we were talking about, is like, all right, so for the spring lineup, this is what we need to do. And he asked me specifically, so are we going to do strawberry? I'm like, yeah, we'll do, you know, one batch of strawberry, but it's going straight into the slushies. It's not even going to go on tap. So
nice. Yeah. That's good. Well, it's great that you've got that kind of community support during a difficult time like this. I think it's great to see people trying to support local businesses of all kinds. And with you guys opening during a pandemic, you know, obviously very scary to think we've been planning on this. This is what we want to have happen. And this is how we have to survive. So I'm glad to hear that people in the community are really behind it and really supporting you guys.
Well, and honestly, it's, you know, and we have this conversation here, you know, within my household frequently, is if we can make it through these times, then we should be able to make it through the times when the bar is fully stacked and people are actually sitting at the bar like they were that first weekend. It was so loud in that place that when we shut down at the end of that night, we looked around and said, we need some sound dampening stuff in here, because this was just insanely loud. And there's still that memory in the back of the head of, this is what a fully loaded establishment's going to be like. And I can't wait until we can get to the point where those plexiglass shields can come down off the bar, and we can actually put all those bar stools back and, you know, really run this. Luckily, with the support that we have from the community and the events that we have with the different homeowners associations where we're located, they're great. We have a lot of repeat customers, and they're bringing in new customers that then become repeat customers. So yeah, the community around here is really spot on. And they also have basically their own cheers that they can go to if they want to.
That's great. Well, remind everybody again where they can find you online.
So it's clearskiesmeadery.co, and that will take you to all the different social media outlets that we have.
Sounds good. Well, like I said, we'll put that on our website and in our show notes. Well, Yancey, I want to thank you for your time today. I hope you and everyone at Clear Skies Meadery stays healthy and busy. And then I look forward to a time in the near future when you and I can share a pint in person.
A little bit more than this.
Hey, whatever you know, right. Well, you said 13%. So unlike when we talked with Tim at DLC, he was like, you know, hey, cider is best served in pints, and come on up and have a pint. I'm not sure if we're drinking mead out of pints or, you know,
well,
horns.
I mean, if you really want to go with a horn, we can set you up with that. But no, I'd recommend a, you know, 5-ounce serving, and then, or even one of our flights where you can try as many as you'd like.
Sounds good. Well, I look forward to being able to do that with you real soon.
All right. Cheers. Thank you. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
Share a Pint is released bi-weekly on Friday mornings and can be found at shareapintpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at share_pint. Show notes for this episode are available at shareapintpodcast.com. Music for the show, Groundwork, provided by Kevin McLeod, and can be found online at incompetech.com. Share a Pint is made possible by help from the Community Media Center of Carroll County. Associated with the craft beer industry and have an interesting story you'd like to share on a future episode? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach us at shareapintpodcast.com or email us at jerry@shareapintpodcast.com. Until the next time we share a pint, I'm Jerry Holla. Prost.